Hi, listeners. I'm your host, Rebecca Kelly, and welcome back to The Station, a fiction podcast about a girl named Ida Shepherd. Now, Ida's trapped on board an abandoned space station called the Delta, and the crew at NASA is desperately trying to save her life before the station disintegrates in the atmosphere. In our last episode, we concluded part two of our story by learning more about Ida's growing relationship with Ale Bacchus, an engineer at NASA. Ale confides in Ida that the engineers are struggling to find a way to fix the broken engine on the Delta. Through their conversation, he learns from Ida that there is, in fact, a rescue vehicle, a Russian Soyuz spacecraft, docked at the Delta as they speak. This is huge news because it means they just might be able to rescue Ida before the orbit on the Delta decays to dangerous levels. Now, in part three of our story, we'll learn more about Ida's past and what happened to her mother, and the plan they'll soon form to make the old, broken Soyuz spacecraft ready to fly again. Are you ready? Let's get started. Here is chapter 30 of The Station. I want to talk about your mother today, Ida. Do you mind if we start there? Tess hesitates with these words and shifts back around, saying, "Okay, scratch that. We need to talk about it, so I'm not asking your permission. I understand that it's hard, and I certainly don't want to push you beyond your comfort zone, but we need to know more about your background, and that includes your mother." "I understand," I say. "Good," she sounds satisfied. "Let's start small. Tell me the first memory you have." I close my eyes to dial into my brain and come up with something. It's just a shred of a memory, but it's the best I can do after being put on the spot. I say, "I remember crawling through the G, along the rubber running track. The smell of the track is what comes to mind first. It's an industrial smell, sort of like a cleaning chemical, but more rubbery, I guess. It still smells that way, but I guess I don't really notice it anymore." "You said you were crawling on the track? How old do you think you were?" she asks. "I don't know, maybe 6 months old. I couldn't walk yet," I say. "That is fascinating," she says in that perky voice she gets when she's heard something strange about me. "Just so I get this correct in my notes, you remember something that happened before you could walk?" "Yeah," I say, thinking harder, trying to pry more scraps from the edges of my memory. "I know that I couldn't walk because I tried to reach up for a vine that was hanging over the edge of one of the garden tables, and I fell over. Nu caught me. She was suddenly there. I'm sure she was there the whole time, but it seemed like she appeared out of thin air to catch me." "Do you know how old you were when you started walking? I mean, I assumed you wouldn't remember, but maybe Nu told you about it?" "No, I remember it," I say. "I was 11 months old." Again, I close my eyes to find more memories. I know they're there, but I haven't thought about those old times in so long that they're a little slippery in my mind. I can see her waiting for me at the end of the row of planting tables. In this memory, she was a very long way away from me, but I know now that it was only a few meters. She called to me, and without even thinking about it, I let go of the table that I was standing next to and walked to her. I know it was the first time that I had walked because of how she reacted. Jumping up and down and throwing me over her head, she was laughing and so happy. I smile at this thought, the thought of my mother, beautiful and proud, laughing with me after I took my first step. I squeeze my eyes shut to bring it into clearer view, and when I open them again, the tears begin to stream down my cheeks in the weak gravity of the G. "Wow," she says, her voice trailing off as if she doesn't believe what she's hearing. "You walked at 11 months and you remember it. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Long-term memory typically takes several years to become advanced enough to contain a memory like that. But you remember it." "Yes, I remember it," I repeat. "I'm not sure why I remember these things so young, but I've always remembered things. Nu used to say I had a photographic memory." "Okay, let's keep going," Tess says. "Tell me about your schooling. How did she teach you?" "I always had learning hours built into my schedule," I say. "Even when I was very little, she was picky about that, you know, making sure I was educated. We covered everything. History, math, geography, reading, writing, art. Pretty much every subject that would have been covered in any other school, I guess. New developed lesson plans based on my age and skill level. Where did she get the information from? Tess asks. From the archives, I say. As I got older, we did more advanced math, eventually getting into calculus and thermodynamic theory. She also made sure that I had lessons on other things. Geography was always my favorite subject. I learned all of the countries and their capitals when I was young, maybe 6 years old. New liked history best. Well, next to science, of course. If she didn't know something, then we learned together by reading through articles or encyclopedias. Art was also a big thing for her. She wanted my education to be well-rounded. I used to draw her pictures, and she would tack them up on the wall inside her sleep compartment. They're all still there, actually. I didn't move anything after she passed away. What about the station? Tess asks. How did you learn to run it? Well, learning about the station was part of my everyday curriculum. Even she had things to learn about it. I know that after the crew left, she realized that the communications weren't going to be restored, and she implemented a number of changes in the computer system so that the station would be more autonomous. In the past, space stations were pretty much flown from the ground, she said, but the Delta was different in that it had all the capabilities it needed to be on its own. She tweaked some things so that we didn't have to spend all of our time running it. As the years went on, we just continued to make changes when necessary. After she died, how did you keep it up for so long by yourself? She asks. I just did it, I say, shrugging my shoulders, even though I know she can't see me. As I said before, she taught me early how to run things. Anytime there were issues, she and I just worked on them together. Being up here, being an astronaut, it just means you have to problem solve more. That's pretty much what we always did. Nix helps too, doing outside repairs and maintenance. Because of him, I've never had to go outside the station for a spacewalk. That's why she spent so much time on him. Spacewalks are dangerous, especially when you're alone. Creating him helped take some of the burdens of space life off of her. Huh, she says, contemplating my answer. So that's the secret to your success. Problem solving. She asks this like I've just produced the answer to some deep and profound question, and it's such an ordinary answer that she can't hide her disappointment. She continues, what about fun? What do you do for fun or in your downtime? Fun. Huh. Everything I do is necessary. Even my free time activities. New always stressed the importance of doing things that take your mind off of the station. That's how she kept from going crazy, I guess. I don't know, I say. I guess I just do normal stuff like reading and watching movies. I like looking through old social media in the archives. There are lots of old YouTube videos saved on there. Do you still have YouTube? Tess laughs at this and says, yes, Ida, YouTube is still around. Social media was, of course, lost to us when global communications went down, but it's come back on strong as ever since the war ended. In fact, I can't wait for you to see the new YouTube platform. You'll be blown away by how much better the videos are and the changes they've made in the interface. Wow, I say, truly excited at the thought of seeing something new and fresh. There are millions of articles and videos held inside the archives, but they're all so dated. Honestly, Tess, that makes me smile, I say. I'm glad to hear it, she says. I'll let Ale know. Maybe he can send you up some new files to watch, new movies, online newspaper articles, history pieces about the war, stuff like that. Oh, I would love that, I say. Great! Okay, well, let's get back to the interview here. What did you and New do together, if you had some downtime, I mean? Well, sometimes we would exercise together, you know, run around the track or ride the stationary bikes. We watched movies together and made supper together. When I was younger, she read me stories. I mean, I started reading on my own when I was about 4, but she still read me stories at night for years after that. When I was really young, she sang to me. Oh yeah, she says. I used to sing to my daughter all the time. What kinds of songs would she sing? Well, she loved all kinds of music, some classical, some pop, some rock and roll. She didn't like new stuff, though, only the old classics. I close my eyes and imagine her singing Suspicious Minds into a cucumber held up to serve as a microphone. Tell me about your daughter, Tess, I say to her. Oh, well, she's caught off guard by this. It sounds like she's more interested in asking the questions than answering them. But she plays along and says, yeah, well, her name is Cherry. She's not much younger than you are. She turned 16 in April. She has long, dark hair and brown eyes. And she's a short girl, like me, but she loves to dance. She's training to be a ballerina at a school in Miami. So I really only get to see her on holidays and over the summer. You sound sad about that, I say. Why don't you visit her in Miami? She laughs at this and says, well, I do visit her when I can, but I have a lot of responsibilities here. It's complicated. Oh, I say. She pauses for a moment before asking, Ida, can you tell me a little bit more about when your mother died? I scowl at this question, even though I know she can't see my face. Well, you saw the medical records, right? I say. I haven't thought about her death in many years, and I don't want to do it now, especially when emotional Ida might jump out at any second and overtake my ability to control myself. Yes, I saw them, she says, but I want to hear how you feel about it. Well, I say cautiously, from the time she started to complain about the pain in her breast, it took only a few weeks. It was that fast, and she was gone. It was terrifying. I can feel the emotions welling up inside me. I say, I can't really talk about that right now. It's so far behind me. I hear her sigh into the microphone. I can tell this is what she has come here to talk about. And I feel bad because I've grown to like Tess. She's been interviewing me now for days, and I want to do what I can to help her research, but I can't bring myself to relive those days. She says, I understand, Ida. Perhaps, in time, you can open up more about it. Listen, I think we've done enough today. It's been almost an hour, and I know the engineers want to talk with you about some upcoming safety procedures they're working on. Safety procedures? I ask, genuinely confused. I wonder what kind of safety they think they're going to give me by mucking up my schedule with safety procedures. She chuckles and says, yeah, I know, it sounds totally ridiculous now that I hear myself saying it, but hey, I'm not the boss. Anyway, it was good talking to you today. Hang in there, okay? I like her choice of words. That's me, hanging around in low Earth orbit, waiting for a ride. Will do, I say. Before she signs off, I stop her. Tess? Yes, she says. Say hi to your daughter for me. Will do, she says, and signs off. Thanks for listening, sci-fi fans. In the next episode, Ale spreads the news to Jade and Patrick about the rescued vehicle currently docked at the Delta, and they begin to form a plan to bring the spacecraft and Ida home. You don't want to miss it. See you next time. Bye.